Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Westchester County, New York Executive George Latimer, a Democrat. Welcome, George Latimer.
Alan, always nice to be with you. It's a real pleasure.
How hard is your job?
You know, it has its moments. It is an executive job. A county government is not as complicated, say, as the state government is, but it's more complicated than, you know, the smaller towns, villages, and cities that, you know, are below us. But, you know, basically, Alan, a county is a large local government. It's a regional local government. So we have to provide services, and that's where the headache comes in. Can you do policing and sanitation and the everyday world and deliver those services? So it's not sitting and making the kind of broad-based public policy that you do in Albany or Washington, but it has its moments.
Some people have said that being mayor of New York is the hardest job after being president. What you just said sort of reminds me of that. You know, mayors have to make sure there's not garbage on the street and that there aren't rats and there aren't this and that. Do you find some association with what you do and what the mayor of New York does?
Well, I think only in a matter of proportion. The mayor of New York has got obviously the largest, most complicated jurisdiction to be a local government official in size and scope. From from Staten Island to the North Bronx to Queens is just immense. From a county government level, Westchester County is the third largest county outside of New York City. It's Suffolk 1, Nassau 2, Westchester 3. Erie County is about our size, slightly smaller. And we're all four of us pretty big size counties, but we're not New York State. But, you know, when you then compare the complexity of Westchester and those other three counties to the smaller counties in the state, you know, we run a county jail. We have a county airport. We run a bus system. We have a large social services department. So in matters of scope, New York City is in a class by itself. The next four or five of us, if you want to include Monroe County, are of a significant size, but not New York City, but we're a lot more complicated than the smaller counties of the state.
And what is the proper way to address you? I mean, if you want to be
formal. You know, I answer to, hey, are you Latimer? Yes, sir, I am.
George.
You know,
People don't say Executive Latimer, do they? Or, I mean, that's not how it's done?
No, well, you know, I said Mr. County Executive, I suppose, is the formal thing. But, you know, Alan, here's the interesting thing, I think, about county government. I know you interview other county officials. We are treated more the way a town supervisor is treated. When you're on the streets of your hometown and you see the town supervisor, if you live in New York, a village mayor, you say, you know, hi. You know, you might say Mr. Mayor, but, you know, you see them more as a person you know on a personal level. And I have that type of relationship in Westchester because you're more local. You don't see a governor very often. So when a governor comes, it's a big thing. When the county executive comes, it's not quite the same, you know, big thing. So it is a lot more on a first-name basis. And frankly, I like it that way. I will tell you one more thing, though. I have been a city councilman and a county legislator and a state legislator and all those different things. The one thing I love about being county executive is I can actually do things and see end accomplishments. We have repaired, you know, a physical thing. We've repaired an historic house or major roadway, and I can see something done. And when I was a legislator, you never could quite see that concrete result.
So is next up being governor?
I think next up is turning 70, but I know that you have a birthday coming up, and you're going to hit an even bigger number. So I aspire to be you in 12 years. You can do the math to know how old I am.
Talk to me about one of your contemporary problems, which is monkeypox. You said the county has 18 active cases and has received about 800 vaccine doses so far. So what's the latest?
Well, it's interesting because monkeypox, on the heels of COVID, has gotten attention because people see it in the same light as COVID. COVID is an airborne virus. You know, I don't have to touch anybody to get it from somebody who's in the same proximity with me. Monkeypox is a skin-to-skin transfer of the virus, and so it makes it very different in terms of its transmission. And that means that it is not anywhere near as widespread a situation. We're sitting on, as we're speaking today, in Westchester, about 3,600 active cases of COVID, you know, varying degrees of severity, most of them not that severe, but nonetheless, 3,600 cases. We have 18 cases of monkeypox. So the size and scope of a skin-to-skin related disease is very different. We've opened up our vaccination centers in White Plains on Mondays and Thursdays, and we're getting about two-thirds of our people coming in from New York City, because that's the heavy concentration of people that feel they're most exposed to monkeypox. And because we are right next door to New York City, we're an easy trip out of Manhattan, the Bronx, and so forth. So we're addressing the problem as it exists now. We expect it will grow somewhat in the future, but it's not the next COVID. If we can manage it properly, it is also not as fatal as the early stages of COVID is. We have everybody that has had monkeypox in Westchester is in recuperation and will survive.
Now, you mentioned COVID, so let's go there. Governor Hochul held a briefing this week, and she said that her administration is preparing for the fall, saying schools are already receiving thousands of COVID tests to stockpile before the start of the school year. Planning for the fall includes encouraging students and staff to test before returning, boosting vaccination rates, providing PPE, and increasing access to covered treatment. Are you worried about another surge?
Well, I think what the governor laid out is exactly the right strategy, which is we make sure that there's vaccinations available. Now people three or four vaccinations deep into a vaccination protocol. We make sure that masking and PPE is available for those who use it. I'm worried in the sense that I don't know what's coming next. None of us do. The next variant could be more severe. It could be more communicable. We don't know. And there's no way we're going to know, and scientists don't know, until it manifests itself. I think the concern that I have, and I think all of us do in public office, is that the public has had it with COVID. They don't want masks. They don't want mandates. And with that, you would have to have a significant outbreak in order for you to go back to some kind of regulations. And then the problem is that if the next variant isn't as easy, so to speak, as the last variants, we'll be less willing to do the things we have to do to fight it. On the other hand, right now, we have very few fatalities from COVID. We have gotten ahead of the curve, certainly in Westchester, where we're highly vaccinated. Nassau, Westchester, places like that are leading the state in vaccination rates. We just are having people who get it. They're sick for a day or two, and that's it. I had COVID in December, and it was a nothing burger. We're trying to calibrate, and I think the governor's correct in making those resources available for schools and everything else. We go into the wintertime, we're going indoors, higher chance of transmission. If we don't get a more serious variant, I think we can manage it, given what we know. But, you know, details out of 11.
But before the governor makes a pronouncement, does she get on the phone with you and your colleagues and ask what you're finding in your localities?
Well, usually we hear from people in and around the governor. We have good relationship with the governor's key staff. So while we speak to the governor, you know, on some occasions, it's usually staff people that call, and they do. And we have, you know, regional folks that we deal with, and my colleagues in the Lower Hudson Valley as a region. And we'll give input, and we'll say, look, this is what we think is happening. You know, unfortunately, you know, you see this, you report on this with all of your interviews. The philosophical differences between the parties make it so that when you're the governor of A party and you're the county executive of B party, no matter what they say, you're gonna have a problem with it. And the reverse is also true. So, you know, I am a Democrat. She is a Democrat. I think probably when they ask us for our input, we give honest input, and it's probably listened to, because it doesn't come off as immediately, an attack on the governor. You know, we'll see how it plays out if the roles are reversed in the future.
So let me ask you this, George Latimer. What do we know about monkeypox? It's got an incredible name. You think of monkeys, but what do we know about it?
Well, it is a virus, and it is transferred in skin-to-skin contact, generally in intimate settings. What we know.
What do you mean by intimate? When I hear intimate, I think about sex, but that's...
Yeah, that's pretty much what you can think about. sex is the most intimate skin-to-skin contact. You might rub your arm that has a rash on it against somebody else's arm, and that too would be skin-to-skin contact, but that doesn't happen much in the society. So, yes, generally it's sexual contact, although it doesn't have to be just that. But what that does lead to is the fact that we cannot test effectively to know if you have monkeypox before a rash develops or a symptom develops. When you get a rash and you see it, palm of your hand, bottom of your foot, somewhere else on your body, then you test the rash to determine if you have monkeypox or if it's some other thing. You can't test in advance. So a person who has monkeypox and is incubating but not yet manifesting themselves might have interaction with another person, intimate interaction, and then you're conveying monkeypox and you don't know you have it yet. So it makes it more difficult. When we're doing testing for COVID, we can test and find out if you have it before it manifests itself, and then you can do the isolation routine and all that. So It makes monkeypox a little trickier, and we also have to try to reach those vulnerable communities where the skin-to-skin contact, when it happens, conveys it. So we have reached out to our LGBTQ community. We've made an outreach effort to try to vaccinate and hopefully make a difference in those things.
So when we spoke in June, we talked about early voting. Shouldn't this be permanent along with a lot of other measures to make voting easier for citizens?
Well, I would certainly agree with that. I think early voting has been a complete plus. We have the flexibility that helps people get the opportunity to vote. And I'll just give you a personal example. In my corporate career, when I used to travel before I was in public office, I might get a call from corporate headquarters. I was based in New York for a company based in Texas. And they might say, George, I need you on the West Coast on Tuesday. Well, it's the Friday before the Tuesday, Alan, and how am I going to vote now? I can't get an absentee ballot that late in the game. Mm-hmm. It's a Friday. I can't go to an open Board of Elections office. So I know there's early voting. So, okay, I can vote on Saturday before I leave for the West Coast. Or somebody has a relative that gets sick down in Florida, and they have to go down and see them, and they can't be there on Tuesday. So early voting has made it a lot more flexible for people to be able to vote early. I was looking at total turnout numbers for this last primary. They're down a lot from 2018, but they were a little bit above the 2014, 2010, 2006 numbers. So I would say early voting has had some benefit in getting a little bit better turnout. We generally have abysmal turnouts in primaries, and there's, I suppose, lots of reasons for that. I'll let the political scientists that you interview opine. But early voting, to me, is a plus, and I hope we continue it and in certain ways expand it.
Well, as a political scientist, I would certainly agree with you about that. Talk to me about redistricting. Have the Democrats blown it when it comes to the gerrymandered maps? In other words, Nadler versus Maloney?
Yeah, we blew it. The royal we. I've said my little piece as a county executive, which isn't impactful, but I've lived through redistrictings myself. The 2012 redistricting when I was an assemblyman, and that was the year I sought the Senate seat. And then I went through redistricting as a county legislator. In fact, I ran a redistricting when I chaired the Westchester legislature 20 years ago. So I've seen this dance before. This was a mess. I think, candidly, the Democrats who did the original maps overreached. And then the court, I think, took the wrong solution to fix the overreach. The overreach would have been to go back to the legislature and say, okay, you need new maps, and we're going to submit them not to a judge in Steuben County, but to a tribunal in Albany of three of my most senior court officials who will look at the maps, and if they reject them, then we are going to do the maps, and you can pretty much bet you're going to be, you're going to stick it to you. And then I think they would have come back with more realistic maps. Now, the whole system that was created 10 years ago was a farce. I mean, let's just call it what it is. It was a farce. I believe it was designed to help the Republicans in the Senate who are on the way toward losing the Senate to give them some leverage. It was not a true independent effort to do what Arizona does or Maine does or Iowa does in terms of an independent redistricting tradition. And when you had an even number of people on the redistricting commission, you knew what was going to happen. Alan, we knew. Anytime you see an even number, that means you're going to deadlock. The Democrats and the Republicans will not agree. And here's the problem. It's not just the partisan control of the state legislature is important now. We're facing a major national issue in the direction of the national government. I'm a Democrat. I work closely with Republicans at the local level. I've had Republican friends in the state legislature. But at the national level, it's war. You know, here we are fumping around in New York, and, I think the Republicans did very well for themselves in this redistricting process, and I do think we blew it.
So, George Latimer, let me ask you this. You think that the Republicans are acceding now for a lot of different reasons to run the show?
Well, I think the Republicans, if you want to talk just pure politics, political skill, the Republicans did a good job, given the fact that they have less than a, you know, less than a super, they can't stop the supermajority, the two houses of the legislature, and they have a small amount of the congressional people. They did a brilliant job of getting themselves the best possible playing field to run on this November.
And they own the Supreme Court, and they own the Supreme Court, right? Don't they?
Right. And at the end of the day, if the Supreme Court decides not only to get rid of Roe and to get rid of the Sullivan law on guns and to change the power of the EPA, they're going to do a heck of a lot more down there. They'll do more damage if they control both the House and the Senate, and then in 2 years' time, the presidency. They can pass national laws to ban abortion, and I'm not sure, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not sure that what New York has done protects us from those kinds of actions. But we'll see. The reality for us in New York State now is the lines are done, and we have to go out and we have to compete. And we have to compete in an environment where the Republicans have certain advantages. But the Democrats have to understand, I am a Democrat, so I'm part of this, we have to go out and express to people in clear marketing, intelligent fashion what we've tried to do in office. I can tell you in Westchester County, we have cut taxes the last 3 years, county taxes. We have seen a reduction in crime in Westchester County. That's not the statewide or the national narrative, but we pound that away every day, along with having done some progressive things here in this county. And, you know, we're a county of a million people. We're not the biggest, but we're not the smallest. But if we don't message, if we don't tell people exactly what we've done, at the national level, we have inflation. We have high oil prices. I don't think that's the fault of the government. I think that's the fault of the oil companies, and I don't know why that isn't part of the talking points. The oil companies set the pricing for their product, and it's not just the Ukrainian situation that's at hand. They're not drilling for more oil. So, you know, but we're not making a persuasive case to point to that, and we're not highlighting the things that have been done. Unemployment is at record low numbers, and that would otherwise be a major story. Every time the stock market goes down, the other side makes a big point of it. Oh, look at the stock market went down. Well, the stock market bounces back, and we don't make the comparative point. So I think we've got a lot of work to do in making people understand exactly what successes we've had as Democrats in this state and, you know, and in this nation. Mm-hmm. And if we don't do that, then we're in trouble. But I think we can make those cases, because here we are in July. And I would tell you this, 5 years ago when I ran against Rob Astorino for county executive, Rob was a two-term incumbent, had way more money than I did. In July, I was dead meat in that campaign, but I wound up winning by 15 points. Things can happen between July and November, and things can still happen this year between July and November.
So let me talk to you a little bit about the Supreme Court rulings, abortion and conceal carry. What impact do those rulings have on Westchester?
Well, in the short term, because the state has issued new laws regarding concealed weaponry, and because we have certain state laws in terms of codifying Roe v. Wade, the access in Westchester for a Westchester resident for abortion health services is not affected day to day. In fact, we as a county government passed a clinic access law, which is unique amongst the counties outside of New York City and New York State. So we have a very very pro-choice county. And I would argue that many of our Republicans in Westchester are also pro-choice and pro-environment. They are conservative in some things, but not in the way that Texas Republicans are conservative. So day-to-day, Alan, it isn't the issue, but it is a motivational issue where people see the loss of Roe as an existential threat. They see the gun law as an existential threat. In practical terms, we are getting swamped with requests by gun owners to be able to have concealed authority. And, you know, we're sort of reeling with the administrative challenge of handling all those requests, because those folks who are gun users, and they see this as, in their minds, their personal safety, that they want to be able to come and go with weaponry on them to protect them in the case of any type of situation. Now, the statistics in Westchester do not prove that. We have less crime today, less violent crime today than we had 4 years ago. But the perception is there, and the perception is there whenever you take an incident and you take the incident and you blow it up on the media day after day, and you talk about this particular heinous thing that happened, a home invasion, a shootout of a bodega or something like that, and then people believe that this is happening in every street corner. It is not happening in every street corner in my county, and I don't think it's happening in most counties. There are areas of the state where we have had an increase in crime, and that is where we have to, you know, target our strategies to address them, but not to fall into the fear pattern that if I pack a weapon and you pack a weapon, I'm safer. I think I'm less safe. If everybody's packing heat on the streets of our cities, we're less safe. Guys are going to pull out those weapons at times when they shouldn't, and I think there's going to be more problems to come.
There, you do sound like a gubernatorial candidate. Okay, let's talk about affordable housing. Everybody everywhere is yelling there's not enough affordable housing. In my little town in Massachusetts, they're yelling about it. So what do you do about that?
Well, on the practical level, as a county government, we've allocated $50 million in capital this year, $25 million for land acquisition, $25 million for infrastructure improvements, sewer pipes, traffic lights, things like that, to help advance affordable housing projects in Westchester. We're behind the eight ball like everybody else is. We probably are working on about, Alan, 2,500 to 3,000 units of affordable housing in various stages, and we probably need three times that, maybe four times that, in order to meet the demand. And as you can appreciate, Westchester, you know Westchester very well, Westchester has a high housing market because it's in demand. It's outside of the city, but it's near New York City, and that invisible hand of the marketplace drives our prices up. Now, we're not Manhattan, so there's a lot of people coming out of Manhattan, maybe through COVID, to whatever reason, saying, gee, I'd like to be close to Manhattan, but I don't want to be in Manhattan, so let me go to Westchester. And that pressure has risen our prices and made affordability more of a problem. County governments do not have the ability to have housing authorities to actually build the housing. So we have to incentivize the housing by using A, capital money, as I've described, B, using industrial development agency leverage to try to get more affordable housing. And that is not easy, because the benefits that an IDA conveys to a development, now you're trying to use that leverage to get them to do more units of affordable housing. And sometimes they'll do some, but then they'll argue that the economics of the project don't allow them to do even more. And if they decide not to go through the government structure and just do it as market rate, they have a market that they can fill their, you know, fill their buildings with market rate people. So it is a very tough issue. And it probably, if COVID wasn't on the scene, I'd say that would have been my number one headache over the course of these 4.5 years as county executive.
Now that you mention that, I think personally you're doing a terrific job. But there's always people out there who are yelling that we ought to have term limits. Now, after you've learned the job the way that you have and you're doing such a good job about it, term limits doesn't seem to be that good an idea. That's a question.
Well, as you know, I proposed a bill which was passed by the county legislature that imposed hard term limits on the Westchester County Executive. We have the toughest term limits in the state of New York, 2 4-year terms, and that's it. You can't come back. And I didn't grandfather myself out. I made it effective with my tenure and forward. Here's the challenge, and I will speak as a Democrat, but I think this is probably true for Republicans as well. If I am a good county executive, and if by the end of 8 years, I'm 4.5 in, if I am a good county executive, and I can't serve a third term, then it's incumbent upon me to develop the next generation of people who could be the county executive, and by that matter, the county legislators, the state assemblymen, blah, blah, blah. The political parties have oftentimes been more about the cult of a person. You get one person at the top of the pyramid, and all the power and all the attention goes to that one person. You're not building something that can last. And if you know American corporations, I served in subsidiaries of Nestle and ITT in my younger years. They are always planning on succession. So they have a CEO at the top of the pyramid, but he doesn't stay in for 50 years. He stays in maybe from age 45 to age 58 or 60, and then somebody else is groomed to be the next CEO. There's no election. There's a selection process. And that happens in the major corporations. And we have a bunch of them here, IBM, PepsiCo, MasterCard, based here in Westchester. And I've watched this turnover, this process. So I'm comfortable with having term limits in Westchester County. And without identifying names, beginning with my deputy county executive, Ken Jenkins, there are talented people who could take over after me. My job is not to say, well, gee, I'm doing a great job. Give me 3, 4, 5 terms. My responsibility is do as good a job as I can and then prepare the next generation of leadership. And truthfully, we ought to do that at every level of government, you know, not just in a county or in a town. It should be the way we look at the state government as well. You've seen where the cult of personality gets you, Alan, and you can't afford to have that. You've got to have a wide group of people and let the competition winnow out, and then you bring your leadership out of that.
Speaking of leadership, speaking of ethics, ethics reform is always on the top of everybody's tongue. What do you make of the latest plan in Albany? Will they ever get this right?
You know, I don't know. I haven't really paid close attention to the latest iteration. I think the problem comes down to, you know, having an objective watchdog that's created by the people being watched is a problem. You know, the people who are being watched don't want to be, you know, held accountable if they can avoid it. So you immediately come up with this strategy to appoint these people, but they're not really independent. They're independent except for the people that appointed them. The structure that has failed in the past, J-COPE and other structures, isn't because of the structure. It's because of the way the people who were managing the process wanted to make sure that their interests were taken care of. So I'm not really sure, as I sit here and think about it, how you create an ethics system that's insulated from the decision makers and isn't a runaway train, right? You don't. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing you don't want. You don't want a group of people that just decide now we're untouchable and we're just going to start, you know, going after the people we don't like and be manipulative. But you do need a stronger ethical thing, and it happens, and then it happens again, and you think we're behind it. Look, I know Brian Benjamin. I served with him in the state Senate. Mm. You know, that's another tragic story to add to the list. And you go through the list of names. You know, look, Shelley Silver, Dean Skelos, Tom Livis, Alan Hevesy. Elliot Spitzer, Andrew Cuomo steps down, Brian. It's an embarrassment. It's an absolute embarrassment. And all of us in public office, me, when I go into a senior citizen center, I might be liked by most of them. There's always one person that's going to look at me and go, yep, another one of you guys, another one of you politicians. What are you doing wrong? And, you know, what do you say? Oh, I'm the honest one, right? Everybody says that until something comes out, you know?
So what is it that makes people go wrong? We only have a minute left. But what is it that takes these people you've just named and makes them go sour?
I think it's ego.
Really?
And I can understand it, you know, when
it's not
people...
greed?
Greed sometimes, yes, for some people it's greed. But if you really want to have money, go in the private sector. There's so much more money waiting. If I leave this office and I go work for one of the major entities in Westchester, I can make three times what I'm making now. It's ego. It's you begin to think they tat same walk. And I've watched this in other individuals, and I try to, you know, fight against it. You have to keep that sense of humility. What do they say in the book of Micah? Do justice, love mercy, walk humbly with thy God. The humble walking part of public office appears to have been lost. And, you know, it's hard to say this is what has to be done because, Alan, you deal with all of us, and we are all individuals in our own way. But it's ego, I think, that is the great underlying vice that leads us to where we are.
We're out of time. Our guest has been Westchester County Executive George Latimer. George, you're always welcome here. You are terrific, and we hope you'll come back soon.
And happy birthday, Alan Chartok. May you have many more.